Welcome to The Curious Sheep, the podcast for everything sheep. We'll ask questions, challenge ideas, learn from each other, and share the wonderful world of farming and all the fun that goes with it. Whether you're a seasoned pro at shepherding, just bought your first sheep, or live in the city and are curious about farming, I hope you can gain some knowledge for your own farm or a tidbit of farm info to share at your next dinner party. Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Curious Sheep. It's good news, I think we don't have technical issues on this episode, which is super exciting, so I hope you enjoy listening. This week, I caught up with Lori Moss. She is a sheep producer near Ottawa, Ontario. For a number of years, Lori and her husband Bob have raised mainly Tunis sheep, and I'm super excited because I have a few Tunis rams now, so I'm excited for their lambs. And Lori is also the expert on sheep parasites. So we talk about fecal scoring, sheep poop, animal health, parasite management, and everything that goes with it. So I think this is really timely. I'm sure most producers who have sheep on pasture, if you've not already dealt with parasites this season, I'm sure you might have to coming up, but yeah, it's always some good information, and if you can't use some of the information this year anymore, definitely plan ahead to have a better grazing season and pasture season for next year. And I guess the other one, it's not just intestinal parasites on pasture, but we also deal with some in the barn as well. Enjoy listening. Thanks. Hi, Lori. Thanks for joining me on the Curious Sheep podcast. How are you today?
Oh, very well. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. You've got a really cool story and you've been up to some really interesting stuff. So I want to find out more about that. But do you want to start by telling us a little bit about your farm, your sheep, and your sheep story?
Well, we moved to the farm that we are right now about 24 years ago, and I was working in Ottawa and Bob was working in Montreal, and if you stick a pin in the middle, you end up in Dunvegan. And I had always wanted to have sheep even before I met Bob, but we ended up breeding horses for a while and then smartened up and started breeding sheep. And we started with North Country Cheviots. And I must admit, I still have a soft spot for North Countries. They are sort of my ideal of what a sheep should look like. They're sort of a block of meat with pegs on four corners, and they're hardy and they're alert and just really attractive. But I started to find out about Tunis, which is a heritage endangered breed. And the more I read about it, the more it attracted me. So we started raising Tunis shortly after we got the North Country. So we were raising both, and that was about a dozen years ago. And we never got big, mainly because at one point we were both still working off farm and commuting into the big cities. And the other thing is there just isn't that many of the endangered breeds, so your numbers are quite limited. But they were a very intriguing breed. They do well on both, you know, in the heat and in the cold. They tolerate our winters. They tolerate the hot summers. They've got good temperament. They are meat clients were just over the roof about the quality of the meat because it's a very fine textured meat. And it maintains the quality even in a more mature animal. I've eaten a six-year-old ram and it's just fabulous. The mutton's as good as the lamb. So we eventually moved into just the purebred Tunis because it was just too difficult for the size we were to justifying buying two or three rams of each breed and the quality that we wanted to maintain. So we sold off the Cheviots and we just maintained the Tunis and didn't regret making that decision. And I left, I was working for the federal government up until about 15 years ago. And I left when I turned 50 And Bob left his job with Domtar shortly after that. So we've been full time, not much more than hobby farmers, but a little bit more than hobby farmers. And I've always been interested in both the health aspects of the sheep and also the production aspects of the sheep. So, like yourself, our flock was always production tested, initially on bio and then on Genovis. And so we always, right from day one, kept production records on our animals.
And last year, you guys decided to, I guess you're not completely out of the industry, but you've sold the majority of your flock. We managed to scoop up a couple rams that we've got. It's a purebred tunis, and the other guy, I think he's 75% tunis, 25% cheviot.
That's correct.
And I'm super excited to get really cute ginger babies because the tunis, they've got this beautiful orange rusty color on their face and their legs. So, and I'm excited to see what they do. Those boys worked really hard. We'll have lambs, I believe, in our September group out of them.
It was funny because one of our vets came in and she goes, "I know I'm not supposed to show preferences, but those tunis lambs are so cute." And they are, they're absolutely beautiful lambs, and but they perform well, which is good. And one of the things that you're quite interested in is I'm processing the wool from them. After 12 years of having sheep, I finally got convinced by the local guild to start as a spinner, and the fleece is just dynamite.
Yeah,
And
I saved the fleeces off the two rams when we sheared them here, and it's a really nice fleece.
yeah, it's really fun to work with. I just sold most of ours. We just had our clip done about a week ago, and the fleeces have sold out very quickly.
Awesome, that's exciting. There's a lot of interest in spinners working with the with very breed specific fleeces too, because there could be so much difference between not even just the breeds, but even within the breed, sometimes you notice quite a few differences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm trying to encourage, that's the aspect of the sheep industry that I'm getting more interested in, is getting the connections made between producers and the artisans, because I think that we have a lot to say about the wool industry in this province, but we need to make sure that we as producers provide them with the quality that they want
Yeah.
and make those connections.
Yeah, there's lots exciting happening within the wool world. And I'm excited that even producers are starting to notice the value in our wool.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But yes, we sold off our main breeding flock last year. The majority, they went to a single producer, which I'm really hoping that she is going to be maintaining them as purebred registered and production tested. She's back. She is also on Genovis now, and so she'll be able to carry on where we left off. And I'm excited that that was happening, to that the flock went to a young producer. And so we just have eight sheep right now. We sort of kid around that they are keeping our guardian dogs employed, and as a lot of people who have the guardian dogs know, that they really need to be kept working. And so they've got this little employment flock. And we've also kept them for fleece. And the other thing is, we kept our really old girls, because we've got three Tunis Cheviot cross females that are 12 years old out there. And those three ewes between them had something like 57 lambs.
Wow.
And yeah, they deserve a good retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gives you some chores to do, right?
Oh yeah, and it's, get up in the morning and have to do things, and Bob has a real bromance going with the we castrated three of the rams as lambs, They were beautiful confirmation, but they didn't have the production records on them, so I didn't want to sell them as breeding stock, but they all have beautiful fleeces on them. So we use them for breed displays because we're involved with preservation of heritage breeds, so we do a lot of breed displays. So we can bring these boys out, show them a nice looking animal, and have the temperament there for a breed display with the public. But Bob goes out there and he's got these three boys around him, and they have, like I said, a bromance going.
Yeah, perfect. Just because you just talked about it, do you have a couple tips to pass on to producers about succession planning? So you did it, you sold the whole flock to another producer. Is there something specific that you worked on with that producer, or how did that work?
It's we had the producer contact us and wanting to buy the whole flock. She had bought a few sheep from us the year before as sort of a test whether she liked the breed, and then she approached us. We had a single producer also by the North Countries, but they didn't continue on with the breed, nor did they continue on breeding. So it's trying to build up a relationship with the producer and making sure that they have the same goals that you have. But like everything, you have no control over what happens after they leave the farm, but it is trying to work with like-minded people who have the same goals, who appreciate what you've done, and want to work towards similar goals.
Yeah, that's good. And I assume timing was probably just right that you kind of wanted to get out, she kind of wanted to get more, and it all kind of worked that way too.
Yeah, and she wanted to work, she had hair sheep and wanted to get into a wool breed. And she also wanted to get into developing seed stock, which is basically what we were doing. We weren't a commercial flock as much as a seed stock producer, where we were selling higher quality rams. We were selling higher quality ewes for people that were just starting or wanted to improve the quality of their flock. And it allows you to have a smaller flock, but a fairly decent revenue.
Yeah, you're doing, and you have to make sure, like, you need to remember you can't just sell breeding stock, right? There's a lot more extra that goes behind it too. So that's
Oh,
awesome.
absolutely.
You're probably doing a little bit of mentoring too, and that's really awesome.
Yeah, and the other thing that we always had as our bread and butter is meat sales. We did direct to consumer meat sales. And we had clients that were with us right from the beginning. And we always sold out every single year. Not huge volumes, but it was something that we can consistently be assured would be happening. And it would be a way for us to have a purpose for the animals that we didn't think met the quality for breeding.
Your new venture is called the No Sheep Sherlock, and your main goal is to help educate producers on intestinal parasites. Is that the gist of that, or do you want to talk a little bit more about what you're getting into?
Yeah, I've been doing this for about 5 years before the No Sheep Sherlock came, and the No Sheep Sherlock name was sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing. But it was, I started doing my own fecal egg counting with the horses originally, because it was something that I was doing a little bit with my vet, but it was a cost thing and it was a timing thing. And I thought, my background is as a scientist. I've got a master's degree in biology. And I thought, how tough can this be? So I self-taught how to do fecal egg counts. And I was doing it with the horses and then definitely started doing it with the sheep because parasites are probably one of the top problems for sheep producers. And so I was testing our own flock, and I had other producers ask me if I could test their flock, and I tested a few other flocks. But what was more important is I had producers ask me to train them. And so I started doing that on an ad hoc basis, a producer here, a producer there. And the demand for the training became so great that I established a formal training program that I ran on the farm here. So I would have, we were doing it in a lab that I have set up in the barn. So I have a maximum of 5 or 6 people that could attend. And we do 2 or 3 courses a summer. And I would run them through the testing protocol for how to do fecal egg counts and how to do identification of parasites. And it's key for monitoring what the situation is with your flock. Whether it's internal parasites that you see predominantly on pasture, which are the gastrointestinal nematodes, or whether it's the ones that you see predominantly in a house type situation, which are coccidia. And it was allowing people to, instead of automatically doing the knee-jerk routine deworming, which has resulted in huge development of resistance to the products out there, that they were only treating as needed, and they were seeing what their flock was. And a lot of times people would, you know, the an animal would be doing poorly, and their first reaction would be to deworm it when there was no problem with parasites at all.
Yeah, it's getting a better handle on what's going on in the first place versus just giving them medication.
That's right. And we've learned over the years that the way we have been using the medication historically has resulted in these medications no longer being able to control the parasites. And without that backup, we're in really deep trouble. So it's trying to get people to do what's called integrated parasite management, where they're looking at their management, they're looking at monitoring, they're looking at treating only as required, and they're looking at combining the fecal egg counts with other monitoring techniques, such as looking at the eye mucous membranes, or looking at body condition or growth rates, or whether or not they've got, you know, poop staining on their back end or stuff like that, and using those in combination to decide who to treat and make sure that you don't treat your whole flock. And on a our own flock basis, we were able to we're our sheep are they're born in the barn, but they go out on pasture, and the lambs don't come back off pasture until they go to slaughter. And we, for the last 3 years, have not had to treat them at all for internal parasites.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's definitely more of a whole flock management thing that you need to have. And the other important thing would be to work with your vet or with your vet clinic because they're the ones that are going to be getting you that medication. So,
That's right.
you know, if they can, most vet clinics, I think, can do those fecal egg counts. It does come at a cost, right? But and even if you can figure out a little bit the pattern going on when your sheep are out on pasture and that kind of thing, it's helping you manage that a little bit better, maybe before you have to go to the vet and get that medication too.
Yeah, the and all vet clinics can do it. Some of them actually just they don't do it in-house. They may send it down to Guelph for analysis, and that comes at a time lag. And for with if you've got a heavy burden of the barber pole worms, that time lag might be fatal. And so I can get an analysis done within a couple, you know, I can collect a sample and 20 minutes later I've got the analysis, and decide whether or not I've got a problem. When I was using the vets at times, it would be a couple of weeks before I got the report back. And that time delay could be, I mean, there was a cost to it, both in the animal health, and there was also a cost to it financially. But it's it's really important that the and a lot of vets are very comfortable with me doing this because it's working in a partnership, and there's a dialogue between ourselves and our vet about what we're monitoring and then what we are doing to manage the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. It's coming up with some of those standard operating procedures, and you can work through those with your vet too, and then hopefully manage, hopefully sheep will do better in the end. That's always the goal.
Absolutely. And one of the things that is really important is, I mean, I had people, the reason I started doing the training initially is I was just appalled at the mortality rates I was hearing in other producers about lambs and even adult sheep succumbing to internal parasites. I mean, I'd have people come in and say that they'd lost 75 lambs to internal parasites. And I mean, I was just gobsmacked. And it's not only an economic thing, but it's also an animal welfare thing. And if it's your cost of losing those lambs, but if you've lost those lambs, then you can be assured that the rest of your flock is not producing at the level that they should be. They're not gaining at the rate that they should be. And that comes at a huge economic cost to the producer. So if we can get it so that it's impossible to eradicate these things totally, but you want to be able to coexist with the parasites so that they are not causing health problems, but they're also not causing the producer economic problems.
Absolutely. So let's chat a little bit about the basic bugs sheep are dealing with. There's sort of your intestinal parasites that you would find on pasture. The big ones would be homuncus and the barber pole worm, right? And
They're the same thing.
oh, is it? I
Yeah,
didn't.
barber pole worm is the common name. Homuncus is the scientific name.
Okay. See, that's why I need to talk to you, because I'm used to barn sheep. So, like, I in barn sheep, right? My big one is coccidiosis and that type of. It's an intestinal parasite, but it behaves definitely a lot differently. But again, it's decreasing that production. So we've got homuncus, cocci. Are there some other main ones producers are dealing with?
Yeah, there's Trichostrongylus and Telodorsagia, and those are all gastrointestinal nematodes. So they're ones that are in the stomachs or the intestines. You've got tapeworms, which there's a question about whether or not they cause an issue. They're not an issue with adult animals, but they can be an issue with lambs. In that, if the levels get high enough, they literally can plug up a lamb so that they can't poop. We had that happen a couple of times with our lambs, and it's got a totally different life cycle. So, but the main ones, the barber pole worm is the one that causes the highest mortality rates. You can have it because it drains the blood out of the animal. So you can have a healthy bouncing lamb, and a week later it's gone because it's a worm that is very prolific, so it produces thousands and thousands of offspring, and they are all draining blood out of your lambs, and you call them little vampire worms, and they show up. They can overwinter within the sheep and show up in the spring at lambing time, and they can also show up in the hot. They like the hot weather. So, in one of our vets said, "Oh, it's August. It's homuncus season." The other two, they're at different times of the year, and when you're doing a fecal egg count. When you look down the microscope, you can't tell the difference between those gastrointestinal eggs. They all look the same. But you can tell by looking at symptoms. So if you have pale mucous membranes, if you barber pole worms or homuncus does not cause diarrhea, You see the pale mucous membranes, you can see them not eating, they're not doing well, and you're having high mortality rates. You're pretty sure that you've got the Homonchus and barber pole. Some of the other worms, the Telodorsager, the Trichostrongylus, they'll cause scours, diarrhea, and they cause reduced production and things like that. The Coccidia, there is several species that sheep can get, but not all of them cause a severe disease. There's only two or three that will cause severe disease in sheep, but they'll. So when you're doing a test, we brought in a ram here that we always quarantine any animal that we bring in and test them, and he had a count of something like 80,000 coccidia, and he looked fine. He was, I mean, he'd stopped growing. But he didn't have diarrhea, he looked bright, he was eating, everything was fine. So it may be that the coccidia that he had were not as pathogenic as some of the other ones.
Yeah, would you agree in the statement that producers are very easy to assume they have an intestinal parasite if there's any sort of diarrhea or staining on the back end of a sheep?
No. If there is diarrhea or staining in the back, I mean, when we put our lambs out on a rich pasture, they have zero parasites, but they get diarrhea just because of the digestive change.
Yeah, exactly. Because I just say that because I've had a couple people ask me, my sheep have scours. Do they have worms? Like, what's wrong with them? And I said, well, if it's a diet change or fresh grass, I mean, it could be a parasite, but what else is going on? So I've just found people kind of asking me questions here and there that they're a little bit quick maybe to jump on it being I. Parasite thing versus a diet thing.
Yeah, and it in our case we found more often than not it's diet. And I mean, when we have that happen, I just put out some dry hay with them, and because they don't have enough digestible dry matter, it's just too rich for them, and it just goes shooting through them. And but they won't have anything. Same as there's some other things that you need to check. We had a strange issue here with copper, and if you want to get into a controversial thing, talk about copper deficiency in sheep, but that's exactly what we had here. And we had a ewe that had very pale mucous membranes, and most people's reaction is, oh, she's got barber pole worm. She had zero worms, but she was copper deficient, and we gave her a copper oxide wire bolus, and she pinked right up. And the copper requirement affects the red blood cells. So even a pale mucous membrane may not necessarily mean that they've got parasites. Even the bottle jaw may not necessarily. The bottle jaw, which is sort of traditionally the symptom of homonchus, which is the sort of jelly-like lower swelling in the lower jaw, is an indication of low blood protein, probably caused by the barber pole worms, but it can also be caused by something else.
Sheep are never an easy answer. That's the problem.
That's right. And the more tools that we can give producers so that they can take control over the health of their sheep and manage things without, I'd like to see producers have the drugs as a backup, as instead of the first line of defense. So they look at their environmental management, they're looking at their nutritional management, they're looking at their flock hygiene. And I mean, I know what your barns look like, and I mean, I'd take a nap on your stall floor at any time. And
That's the ultimate test. If you want, if you wouldn't want to lay down in it, you can't expect your sheep to lay down on it.
that's right. And I mean, it's if you kneel down and your knees get wet, you need to add Dr. Straw.
Yes.
And that's one of the big issues for coccidia in a housed animal is the cleanliness of the pens. And you do a whole lot better with keeping the pens clean, keeping the pens dry, in control. I mean, I've never used a coccidia stat on this farm, period. We've never had a problem with coccidia. I've treated maybe a handful of animals for lambs for coccidia, but it was sort of 2 to 3 days treatment and that was it. But it's making sure that the areas are dry, the areas are clean, you don't have sort of overflowing water pumps. You don't have the lambs crawling out into the manger. When I see people on social media and I see a lamb running up and down the manger in their barn, I'm going, they have a problem with coccidia.
Yeah, they're spreading something around if they're running around in the feed, right?
That's right. That's right.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically about humongous. That's probably the number one that producers deal with, especially on pasture. Most
Okay.
producers probably have the sheep out on pasture now and might be dealing with some of this. Can you talk a little bit about the life cycle of humongous and how it works sort of with the sheep in conjunction with the plants in the pasture?
Okay. When I'm doing the a lot of the gastrointestinal nematodes have the same life cycle. So they go through a series of larval stages. So the sheep eat what's known as stage three. It's the infective stage of larva, and it's on the grass. It goes through, I'll start at that point. I mean, it's sort of where do you start? So they eat the larva, it goes through their digestive system, it goes through another couple of larval stages to an adult, which mate and produce eggs, and the eggs are pooped out into the pasture. And those eggs hatch in the pasture, and they go through a couple of larval stages in the pellet, so they stay in the pellet, but then it's the third infective stage that moves out of the sheep pellet onto the forage, and they don't crawl. They're kind of a little worm. They actually swim, so they up maybe a couple of inches up the grass, and usually when there's moisture in the grass. So if you've got a heavy dew or in rain or something like that, they can go up a little bit higher in the grass. So the general idea, and from the time the sheep poops it out till the time it forms an infective stage varies. And it varies with temperature and things like that, but it can be as short as sort of 3 to 5 days. For humongous in warm weather and ideal conditions. That infective stage can stay on the pasture for quite a while. And we actually had a scary situation here because I was taught how to hatch them out and look at the larval stages under the microscope. And I hatched them out in my lab. So I had them in the lab around June or July, this poop sample in the lab, and I forgot about it. And it stayed in the lab over the summer, over the winter, so it went through freeze-thaw cycles. And I just out of curiosity, the next spring went, I wonder. And there was still infective larva in that sample.
They're there a long time.
Yeah, that so it's so what you want to do is when you have to, it's like fighting a war. You need to know your enemy. So you need to know that these things hatch in 3 or 5, and then get to the infective stage in a very short period of time. So you want to move your sheep out of that pasture before that happens. so that you are moving them ideally every 3 days. You recognize which of your animals are the most vulnerable, which are your lambs, and the next that are the most vulnerable are your late gestation, your ewes, and your lactating ewes. And then your dry ewes are probably your least vulnerable. I always say that the rams are pretty vulnerable because we tend to let them do their job and then slap them into a pasture and forget about them. So you want to constantly be moving them. So what we did with our sheep is they got moved every 3 days. The lambs got moved after weaning every 2 days. And the lambs never went on the same pasture twice in a year. And so it was trying to maximize the amount of time that was before that pasture had potentially infective larvae on it before lambs ever went back on it. And so what we did is they went on to the main pasture with their dams, and then at weaning, they went on to the second cut hay field. And so the haying would basically sweep that field clean of any potential parasites on it. It's one way to reduce the parasite load. So they would go from the main pasture onto the hay field. They're moving every 2 days, and they went right from that grazing system to slaughter.
Yeah, that's a lot of I kind of get, because we don't do pasture, but like I'm busy thinking about different rations in all my groups. But if you're doing pasture, you're thinking about all the different groups and who you have to move where. So either way, it's so much you really have to plan for nutrition and their digestive health, regardless of if there are
Absolutely.
bugs there or not, because you have to think about those intestinal parasites, but then you're needing to make sure that ewes with young lambs that they're on the best forage. And then, like you said, right, don't forget about those rams because you want to make sure that they're in top health when you do need them again.
Absolutely. And the like we would do random tests throughout the season just to make sure that things were in tip-top shape. So because we were small enough and I happened to have maybe a little bit of OCD, I would test every single ewe at lambing. And then I would test every single ewe at weaning. And we would probably need to treat about 30%, 30 to 50% of the ewes at lambing, because after the winter, as I mentioned, Homonchus can overwinter in the sheep, and you get what's known as periparturient egg rises. So, because the immune system of the ewe is somewhat compromised because of the burden she has carrying a lamb and getting ready to lactate and things like that, it sort of knocks down their immune system, and the parasites that they've carried over the winter tend to thrive in that situation because the ewe's immune system isn't fighting them off. And so we would test them at that time. We would treat them as needed. But like I said, we are only treating about 50% of the animals. And when you do account, the general expectation is only about, 20 or 30% of your sheep are producing the majority of the parasites in your fields. So it when you think about that, it really doesn't make sense to treat 100% of your animals. And then we would treat them again or test them again at weaning. And I might at that time maybe treat 10%. But it was interesting. I had one ewe that quite often she was a heavy producer. And she quite often needed to be treated at lambing. But as soon as we weaned those lambs off her, even if she had parasites within a very short period of time, because she didn't have the burden of lactating, she would fight them off on her own, and I didn't have to treat her. She would go from a parasite count of maybe 600 eggs per gram, and a few weeks later, she'd be down to almost zero.
Weird question.
So.
Maybe my brain is thinking, okay, you said homunculus can overwinter in a ewe.
That's right. They don't.
How did it know how to overwinter in a ewe? Mud, right? They can feel that it's cold and it's winter, but how does it know in a sheep where it's nice and warm?
They go into a condition called hypobiosis, which is a dormancy, and it's at this larval stage. And I agree with you. I mean, this is a discussion I've had with a pile of parasitologists. I've got a theory, and I have no clue whether it's right because I mean, they don't have a little, weather station that they stick out the back stay end of the sheep saying, it's kind of cold out there. It's the same temperature in the sheep, whether it's summer or winter. It could be something to do with maybe melatonin levels, with the sunlight levels, but you have the same thing happening where the parasites go into dormancy during a drought season in some place like Australia. So it has nothing to do with the winter or cold or things like that. My theory, which I'm sure I'm going to have a few parasitologists jump all over me, but as I'm thinking that it might be something in the forage.
Which
So when you have a stressed forage, you may have biochemicals in the forage that change, which may be a signal for the parasites to go into dormancy. I mean, I'm going off on a wing here. But same as in the fall, the forage biochemistry may change as it's going into winter and things like that. And maybe those biochemical signals are triggering the parasites to go into dormancy. If this is correct, I want co-authorship on the paper. If not, you didn't hear it here.
Science can be so interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that was like, huh. So you were talking a bit about the mucous membrane. Can we cover Famotia a little bit and what Famotia is and how producers can use that to selectively treat animals? Because it's easy enough to do some fecal egg counts, especially on a smaller group of sheep. Like you said, you were doing it at lambing time, you did it again at weaning. If you've got a larger flock, it's going to be a lot quicker to do Famotia in the chute and then selectively treat, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And there was a poster that I did at the OSF, the Ontario Sheep Farmers Conference, a couple of years ago, where I talked about how you can do a subsample of your flock with fecal egg count. It's because it is a big issue with commercial flocks, because there's no way you can do fecals on every single animal. But what you can do is you can do a subsample of 10 or 20 animals and sort of estimate what percentage and what the load is on your animals with a fecal egg count, and then you run your whole flock through the chute and you get your hands on the animals and you're doing body condition scoring, so you're finding out what body condition your animals are, and you're doing the Famotia. And the Famotia is basically where you are, there's a real sort of rhyme that goes with it, whether you're sort of pushing, but you're looking at the lower eyelid and looking for a color change, which is indicating the animal has anemia. So it goes from, I've seen animals that are just pure white. But there is a little card, and you can do training. I think it's the University of Rhode Island has online training for Famotia. And I don't know whether you have an option of putting links on your blog, but we can put the link for that site, and you can do online training, especially now with COVID, and you can't get out and do hands-on training, where you are looking at the lower eyelid and you're comparing the color of the lower eyelid with a standardized color chart. And if it is bright red, you're not treating, but there is a gradient. And if it goes below a certain level, they're recommending that you treat those animals. So if you're doing a combination of looking at the body condition, you're knowing whether or not your lambs have stopped growing or not growing in the way that you're expecting them to be growing. You know if you've got scours at the back end. You're looking at all those different monitoring tools and using it to decide which of your animals to treat and which to leave.
And just for those who might not know, anemia would be
Low red blood count.
so if you don't have blood in your system because you've got intestinal parasites, you're going to have white eyelids.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean it, you've got a little vampire in your guts that's sucking you dry.
So with the FMHA scoring, you can get that overall pretty quick health assessment. And what the score of 1 to 0 to 5, right? So 5 is
That's
good,
right.
that's a lot of blood. And again, depending on what's going on the farm, if you're running animals through the chute, any animal that would say score probably less than a 2 could get treated. Because depending on, again, doing that base level fecal egg count, you would have an idea of how many sheep in the flock have the parasite. And then you can selectively treat. So you're going to be using less medication, and you're also going to be helping so that you're not developing resistance in the sheep. Can
Yeah, and
you?
that's the general idea about not treating every single animal is you do not, you want to leave a number of your flock untreated so that you have a group of animals and specifically a group of parasites that have not been exposed to the drugs and are not being selected for resistance. I mean, Charles Darwin was right. You are selecting, you're looking at the survival of the fittest. So if you've got an animal that has been treated with a lethal drug, which this is, the only ones that survive are the ones that are resistant to it. And so what you're trying to do is avoid having that happen. So you're allowing these products to be able to be usable for a longer period of time. Like in our flock, when we first got here, everyone was saying, well, you've got to treat your whole flock on a routine basis. And because of that, a lot of products we can't use on this farm, both in the sheep and in the horses. Like ivermectin is useless on both of those animals. And they did a study at the University of Guelph on the level of resistance in a lot of the farms, and a great many of the products out there no longer work. And we really don't have a whole lot of choices. We do have two new products on the market, but we don't want to have the same thing happen with these products as what's happened with the ones that we've had in the past.
Yeah, that's when we started in sheep and we still had them outside. It was, just get the Ivomec, let's just drench everyone and problem solved, right? But there's so much more behind it.
Well, oh, that's right. I mean, my background's genetics, and I mean, I should have known better than to do that, but it was just sort of the industry standard. You just routinely do it. And I mean, I even at the beginning when we first started with horses, had a vet say, well, there's no such thing as de developing resistance to ivermectin. And I'm pleased to say that vet has changed his tune. because it's just, you would expect that to happen. Constantly treating with a drug, you're constantly going to be selecting for ones that are resistant to it. And so, if we prevent development of resistance, if we put tools into shepherds' hands, if we reduce mortality rates due to parasites, and I mean, you really shouldn't have huge mortality rates to parasites. And if you allow these animals to grow at the greatest rate. I mean, we went from when we had, and it isn't even big flocks where you're having the problem. I mean, we had a tiny flock And we started developing parasite problems because at the beginning I was quite naive and thought, oh, I can treat them with garlic and do things so organically. Well, no. But we didn't lose animals, but what we did lose is gain. And we had animals that should have been gaining at, over 0.5 pound a day to close to 1 pound a day, were gaining at 0.1 pounds a day.
Yeah, and that's really discouraging too, especially for a producer starting out. You think, you're really excited about getting sheep or getting into this new industry, and all of a sudden you've got sheep dying. It's super discouraging, and that's not helpful either for growing flocks and having producers in it long term.
Well, and it's and also sheep that are not gaining at the rate that they should be, it's all money out of your pocket
Yeah, it
because
costs a
it's
lot of
taking
money.
them longer to get to market size.
So, say we've had to treat some sheep. It's usually a good idea to put them into a, I would call it a sacrifice pasture, right? Because once we treat them, what happens?
Well, it used to be that the idea was you treat and move, and they have gone against that now.
Okay.
So what they do is they treat and hold for a couple of days, and with the general idea that these animals will pick up, they won't be just carrying, like if you treat and move, the only, and especially if you treat the whole flock, the only parasites that they're carrying are the resistant ones. But if you treat and hold, then they will pick up some of the susceptible parasites as well. The University of Guelph does have a very good online manual on the handbook of parasite management in sheep and goats. I may have the title a bit wrong, but it's a combination of people like Andrew Peregrin and Paula Menzies that wrote this, and it is available online, and it talks about all the different strategies about treating and moving and treating and holding and why you do each. And it's an excellent manual.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll make sure to put the links into the show notes so everyone can find that. So if we're talking about resistant parasite, that also turns into finding resistant sheep. There's been some producers working on, I believe it's DNA testing, right, to find those resistant sheep and breed for more of those.
I think they're doing a combination of DNA testing. I think they're also doing some enzyme, like salivary enzymes. I can't remember all the things that they're doing, but they're also doing fecal egg counts. So they're looking at animals. Like in theory, I was doing the same thing with the fecal egg counts because I've got 8 years of data on all our sheep on the fecal egg count. So you're looking at ones that consistently have low fecal egg counts. And in both the United States and Australia, they've got a section in their Genovis equivalent, so their production testing equivalent, that is looking for resistance based on fecal egg counts. What I found is for your whole, and again, it's my theory, is you get more bang for your buck if you cull for susceptibility than if you select for resistance. So what you're doing is you're bringing your whole the status of your whole flock up. So you, as I mentioned earlier, that 20% of your sheep are carrying the majority of your parasites. What you want to do is get those low-hanging fruit and get them out of your flock. So if you have an animal that is consistently needing to be treated, is consistently have fecal egg counts, get rid of them. And that in general will bring this the resistance of your whole flock up because you're getting rid of the susceptible animals. And I found that that was more effective for us. So if we had an animal that constantly needed to be treated or constantly had bottle jaw or constantly had high fecal egg counts, we got rid of them. And that made a big difference in the general health of our flock because the ones that were remaining tended to be resistant. But even the most resistant animal, I don't feel can tolerate bad management. And so you cannot take a sheep that has been selected for resistance and put it into filthy, parasite-laden fields and expect them to do well. So it is a combination of, and the other thing that you need to look at is why they're resistant. And there's different reasons for resistance, including things like behavior, which a lot of people are surprised when I say that, but we spend a lot of time watching our sheep. And the gals that tested the highest in fecals, they tend to be the ones that are grubbing underneath the feeder for every scrap of grain, or they're grazing very close to the ground. And some of them were more for browsers. So they would graze very high in the plants, whereas ones that were grazing very close to the ground or were picking up every piece of grain on the ground tended to have higher counts. And that's more a behavior thing. And they were teaching that to their lambs, because grazing is a learned behavior. And so it's not just a genetic resistance, it's nutrition and the behavior. Higher protein levels, better nutrition will help with resistance. Because if you're not doing the proper nutrition, things like elevated condensed tannins in the diet helps with resistance. A higher bypass proteins helps with resistance. So it really is, it's goes well beyond genetics.
Definitely multifaceted.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm out of questions on my end. Did I miss anything? Have you got anything else to add?
Yeah. There is a huge, even though we're stuck now, and I can't do my courses this year, and neither can Ontario sheep farmers, because fecal egg counting courses are really kind of hands-on. I've seen people try to do it online, and the problem is when we teach people here, they do okay until they looked on the microscope, and their first reaction is, everything you see under the microscope looks like a parasite egg, and then until you learn how to identify them. But there is a huge amount of resources online right now that people can use. And it's parasites can be managed. And if you look at what happens in the wild, and you think about it that way, wild sheep are constantly on the move, and they may not return to the same pasture area for a year. So they're constantly on the move. And if you can sort of mimic that on your farm and keep your sheep moving, move on to integrate your sheep grazing onto your croplands and swap that around, it's good for the croplands, it's good for your sheep, and use your whole farm for your sheep. I love what Chris Moore and Lindsay are doing with their sheep, because they've got access to that solar farm, and they're constantly moving their sheep on a huge area. I mean, it's a massive farm, solar farm of 200 acres. And they're finding that it's managing their sheep that way, parasites are not as big a problem for them. And so there is a way to manage without exclusive reliance on drugs. Look at management first. Look at drugs as a fallback instead of the reverse.
Absolutely. Solve the problem, don't treat it.
Absolutely. Be proactive instead of reactive.
Awesome. I think that's a lot of information. Hopefully that producers can use and definitely learn and then look up some more information. Where can they sign up for a class or how do you do that? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. It's hawkhillfarm.ca, and it's under, I think I've got it under services. Of course, unfortunately this year I won't be able to run the courses, but hopefully things will be back on track for next year. I've worked with the Ontario sheep farmers. I can't train everyone in Ontario. So they have worked with a couple of veterinarians, and The deal is I train everyone from Kingston East, and the Ontario sheep farmers have made arrangements for other classes to be held elsewhere in Ontario. And if things had not changed this year, I was also planning to go up north, up to Northern Ontario and run a course up there. But the main courses that I hold are here at the farm, and there's two modules. One is the laboratory course, which is the fecal egg counting lab course. And then I run a second module, which is how to develop an integrated parasite management plan. So, because the plan will change from farm to farm, from season to season, so there isn't a one size fits all, but it's an approach on how you can develop a management plan on your farm. And it is something that if you're doing a wellness check with your vet, to sit down with your vet and work through that. And but I teach that as well, and hopefully that'll be back up and running next year.
Perfect. Yeah, definitely needs to be hands-on. And I'll ask you a fun question too. Not that talking about sheep and poop isn't fun.
Gosh.
Do you have a favorite book that involves sheep or a movie that involves sheep?
Oh, I like Babe. As far as movies, the only one I can think of offhand, but there was one, and it was an absolutely superb book, and I can't remember the name of it. You sprung this on me, and it is by a shepherd in the Lake District in England, and he's raising Herdwicks, and it's sort of a memoir, and it's really, really good.
Oh, what's his name? I think I know what you're talking about.
Is it Red Banks or something like that?
Yes, James.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I know
It's
that
an
one. It's really good.
yeah, it's an excellent book. I really enjoyed it. Actually, that's too bad you didn't sort of, because there was another one I read about a year ago, and again it was a memoir about someone who was a shepherd, and you do that, and it's interesting. I loved the James Herriot books, and strangely enough, there's things that he was talking about with sheep that I ended up using on the farm, and one of them was he had a flock of sheep that all went down because of dog worrying, and they were on the ground, and he couldn't figure out what was going on. And a pack of dogs had gotten into the flock, and the flock all collapsed. And he realized it was a calcium deficiency that was caused by stress. And we had a new guardian dog pup for some queer reason, decided to go after one of our ewes, and she collapsed. And I remembered that story from James Herriot, and I treated her with calcium, and she came up. So there's
That's a
things
good
you
one to
can.
put into the sheep down treatment bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome. I'm going to get back to your day. Thanks a lot for taking the time. I'm sure researchers will really find the information useful. And I'll put all those links onto the show notes. So the FAMACHA. You mentioned the University of Guelph Parasite Management, and I'll put a link to your website as well in case
Okay.
there's hopefully we can do classes again next year and people can go out to your farm and look at some poop under a microscope.
And what more fun can you have?
Exactly. Thanks a lot, Laurie.
Nice been talking to you.
Well, there you go. I hope you all have a brain full of parasite information and knowledge that you can now use on your own farm. And I wish everyone a flock of happy, healthy, parasite-free sheep. Make sure you check out the links I posted in the show notes for some of the information that Lori was talking about. So, FAMACHA scoring, the OVC parasite handbook, and some other parasite and worm information. See you next time. Thanks for tuning in, and make sure you head on over to Instagram to follow us at CircleRLam, where I'll be posting links to the episodes, as well as the show notes and any related tip sheets and materials. Feel free to ask any questions or give us suggestions for future episodes. Thanks, and happy farming!